This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today is Mujahid Al-Fayyad, who is the imam from the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center. Welcome, Mujahid.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Now, you have a doctorate from the University of Illinois. Tell us about that.
Well, I got my PhD from the University of Illinois, the Department of Food Science, in 1979. And that was in food, but I started after that teaching at the level of universities. And then after that, I decided to go and gain some more knowledge in Islam, because this is a part of my not only my faith, but it's part of my hobby, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got some other degrees also in Islamic studies. And then I decided to, after my so-called retirement, is to serve my my community here in town. So I was invited, actually, to come and be imam of the mosque over here in town.
Now, what is an imam? Is it like a teacher? Is it like clergy in Christian terms?
Well, it is both of them and a little bit more. I mean, the imam in Arabic means the one who leads.
Ah.
So it could be the one who leads the prayer,
mm-hmm.
The one who gives the sermon on Friday, the one who leads the five daily prayers every day. And also he's the one who leads his community in terms of knowledge, in terms of teaching them Islam, and teaching them how to deal with others, with non-Muslims. So it involves teachings, it involves leadership, it involves counseling, guiding them in life, and also the imam should be involved in the pure religious affairs, but also the social, educational, and some other aspects of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And is it true that in Islam anyone can read the prayers, can read the Quran, anyone in the community?
Well, there are some conditions put by the scholars that the one who knows how to recite the Quran the perfect way, the one who memorizes the Quran also major parts of or chapters of the Quran, he is entitled to lead the prayer. If the regular imam is not there,
mm-hmm.
if he is there, he is the one who is entitled to lead the community in the prayer.
I see. Yeah. And how many different people might recite the Quran, lead the prayer at the mosque here in Central Illinois?
Well, I could say that all of them are eligible, and also some of them are qualified. But when I'm absent for a certain reason, there's a list of people who are mm-hmm. qualified to be the imam, because we have a kind of list of priorities who comes first after the imam.
I see.
So we have a list of five or six when the imam is absent,
mm-hmm.
And they are there, they could lead the prayer. If none of them is there, people who are getting ready for the prayer could choose one of them.
I see.
So he could be the imam leading them. And it's always when he does mistakes, even the imam, if he does mistakes, people can correct him. Something quite normal in Islam. Yeah.
Now, you've brought someone with you to the studio today who sometimes recites the Quran. Introduce us to your guest.
Okay. with us is my son, Abu Bakr. He's been involved in the recitation of the Quran in the mosque. Sometimes he calls for the prayer. He raises what we call azan, or call for the prayer.
Mm-hmm.
He participates also in some of the activities in the mosque by reading and reciting. When he is alone with his people of his age, he could be the leader of the prayer instead
sure.
of his father. So and he also participated in the Whirlwind Project for the last 2 or 3 years, and he was part of a group of people reciting and narrating stories about the Quran. So he's got a good voice. Okay, he learned that from his dad and also from his family. Yeah.
And I had asked you to bring your I know you have two sons, but I asked you to bring Abu Bakr because I had heard him do the chanting at one of the Whirlwind concerts earlier this last month, and I thought it was very moving. Welcome. It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
Now, tell me a little bit about yourself. How old are you?
I'm 14 years old.
And where are you in school?
Centennial High School.
What grade?
Freshman year.
Ah, freshman year.
Yeah.
And how did you first learn about this way to chant the holy book?
Actually, I learned it from my family and friends. And most of the time, I go to the mosque and hear people chant and, like, in the prayers. And when we used to be in other countries, the TV was in Arabic, so I can, like, hear it at home most of the times.
And the Quran is written in Arabic.
Yeah.
Yes. And what language did you have as your own home language growing up?
Arabic.
Arabic.
Yeah.
Okay. And when did you start learning English?
I learned it in, like, different countries because each school that I went to, they learned a little bit of English. But mostly when I came here 3 years ago, I learned the most. Yeah.
And how many countries have you lived in growing up?
About 13.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mujahid, you grew up in Iraq.
Yes.
Outside Baghdad, do I remember?
No, I was born in Baghdad.
You were born
My family is in Baghdad.
Uh-huh.
But we were originally from a small city on the west side of Iraq. But I was born there. I was raised there. I finished my school also, my BSc in Baghdad University. And then after that, also my master's. I got my master's from there. But after that, I got a scholarship and came to the United States. I stayed there in Champaign-Urbana, and that's why I like the city and I like the community over here.
And why you came back when they asked
why
you to
leave? Yeah, I came back, and that's why also I was chosen among maybe 21 or 22 applicants who applied for this job, and they chose me according to my qualification and also according to my experience with the community.
And getting back to you, Abu Bakr, am I saying your name right, Abu Bakr?
Yeah.
All right. You came here, what, 3 years ago, you said? All right. And why don't you give us an example? Could you read something or chant something from the Quran so our listeners could hear what Arabic sounds like when it's read this way?
Sure. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على رسوله الكريم محمد وعلى سائر الأنبياء والمرسلين ربنا تقبل منا إنك أنت السميع العليم وَتُبْ عَلَيْنَا إِنَّكَ أَنْتَ التَّوَّابُ الرَّحِيمُ رَبَّنَا آتِنَا فِي الدُّنْيَا حَسَنَةً وَفِي الْآخِرَةِ حَسَنَةً وَقِنَا عَذَابَ النَّارِ رَبَّنَا لَا تُؤَاخِذْنَا إِن نَّسِينَا أَوْ أَخْطَأْنَا رَبَّنَا وَلَا تَحْمِلْ عَلَيْنَا إِصْرًا كَمَا حَمَلْتَهُ كما حملته على الذين من قبلنا ربنا ولا تحملنا ما لا طاقة لنا به واعف عنا واغفر لنا وارحمنا أنت مولانا فانصرنا على القوم الكافرين.
Thank you very much. And Mujahid, could you give us a rough translation, paraphrase of this from the Quran?
Well, he started with praising God, saying, all thanks are for God, the Lord of the universe, and praise be on his prophet and all prophets of God, and all prophets and messengers of God. And he says after that, he quotes from the Quran these verses. These are called verses of supplication. It means that when somebody reads that, he supplicates to God. He is asking God, the all-hearer, the all-knowledgeable, to forgive him, to forgive the one who recites the Quran, and also is asking God to bless him with good things in this life, and also in the life after, and protect him from hellfire, from the punishment in hellfire. And he is asking God to forgive him if he forgets about things, about not doing things the right way, if he does mistakes, and also asking God not to burden him with duties that he cannot afford, and also asking for forgiveness for those people who were before us, because we believe in the religions before us, Christianity and Judaism, and he's asking God also to be victorious upon the non-believers. I mean, the non-believers means that those people who do not believe in God.
Mm-hmm. On Keeping the Faith this afternoon, we're talking with two guests from the Islamic tradition, the Imam from the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center, who you've just heard giving us a translation from the Arabic of the Quran. We've been talking with Dr. Mujahid Al-Fayyad, the Imam, and his ninth grade son, Abu Bakr. Abu Bakr, let me ask you again, how do you prepare for this reading when you're doing it in the mosque? What do you do, like when you first, for some of our listeners who've never been to a mosque, what's the first thing you do, like when you go in the door?
I would just say, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, which is all praises to God.
Mm-hmm. So that's sort of an introduction to any of the readings.
Yeah.
Okay. And before even that, you've prepared by showing respect for the mosque by taking off your shoes. You've done a ritual washing.
Yes. Before prayers, we would wash our hands and face and legs. So we would be clean before we pray.
Okay. And the setting in the mosque here, it's a very lovely building with quotations from the Quran around the top. Mujahid, how were those selected, those quotations that are there in the worships?
Well, this quotation is being selected from the Quran. It's a verse from the Quran, but it shows how Abraham, the father of prophets, was asking God for guidance. And he asked God, saying, رَبِّ جَعَلْنِي مُقِيمُ الصَّلَاةِ. Oh, God, let me be among those who pray. And this was chosen to show that we are representing a religion which is a continuity of religions before us. So this a kind of gesture towards others. And when they come and see that Abraham, although it's not being translated into English, that's something unfortunate. But at least when people ask about that, we will tell them that, well, this is what Abraham asked God to be. So the prayer is not something strange. Abraham used to pray, and also prophets before and after him used to pray, and we are following the same way of Abraham.
And let me encourage listeners who might have a question about some of the things that we talk about today, please call us anywhere you can hear this program. You may call us free, 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. In Champaign-Urbana, there's several local lines that you can access by punching in 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. And, of course, as always, this is a live program, and we're eager to have listeners participate by making comments or asking questions. Well, getting back to the Whirlwind performance, the experiential workshop that's coming up again, we mentioned that Abu Bakr had done the chanting at the last concert that Whirlwind sponsored here in Champaign-Urbana. But there's an experiential workshop coming up this next Saturday at the University YMCA. That'll be Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock, March 20th. And Mujahid, you will be there.
Yes.
And Vera Duncanson will be there representing the Catholic tradition. Mm-hmm. And the program will be giving people a chance to hear and experience and try themselves the different prayer bead traditions. The use of beads is done in Christianity, particularly with Catholics, mm-hmm. But it's also done in Islam. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be showing some very interesting Muslim prayer beads. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, basically, the event is going to be about how the Muslims pray and what do they say usually in the prayer, because mm-hmm. sometimes people come and witness the prayers and see that the prayers is done in Arabic.
Yes.
Sometimes people are curious to know what we are saying. And sometimes when they say what you are saying, they just thought that this is a kind of strange religion. So we'd like just to tell them that what we are doing is not very strange or it's not very different from the tradition of other people of the divine religion. This is one thing. The second thing, of course, we are going to have songs and songs of religion. And this will give a kind of entertainment also to those people who are going to attend. In addition to that, the use of beads. In the old Islamic tradition, people, when they finish their prayer, they sit for a while after the prayer for supplication. In the beginning of the supplication, they should say something about God, praising God. So they should count on their fingers. Okay, all the names of God. I mean, the merciful, the generous, and this and that. We have 99, we call it 99 beautiful names of God. So people sit after the prayer and start praising God personally and sometimes collectively as a group. We are going to show people how these people are doing. In addition to that, of course, during history, people, instead of counting on their fingers, they started counting using the tradition of others,
sure,
which is the tradition of beads, using beads. So using beads is not limited to any religion or to any nation, by the way. It's been in Judaism, it's been in Christianity and Islam. So people use these beads to count the names of God. So we'll be showing people how to make these beads and also how to put them together. What kind of colors are involved? How the number on which basis the number is made and into this what we call misbaha, what they call the lazy beads. It is not the lazy beads because it should be for those people who are active and they are praising God. So we'll be showing also a collection of beads. Some of them, I have a collection of 30 or 35 of them, of very precious stones. So these are going to show, these people how people of different culture, Muslims and even non-Muslims, use these beads in their prayer, as well as sometimes it's considered a kind of accessories for mm-hmm. people. It could be used for women. It could be used for men. So we are going to show also other people of other religion doing.
Now, what are some of these beads made of that are used in Islam?
Well, most of the beads that I have is made of precious stones. Some of them are brought from old Russia.
Oh.
Some of them are from the former Soviet Union republics. Mm-hmm. Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, mm-hmm. all of these Stan countries. They are made, I don't know exactly what are the names in English, but I know the name in the original language.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and some of them, they give smell. When you rub them, you can smell something. It could be made of this
sandalwood. Maybe.
Sandalwood. Uh-huh. Some of them are... they can change colors with the time, with light. So all of these are precious, and some of them are very valuable.
I see.
Yeah.
And this is a free opportunity for people to come and experience both Muslim and Catholic use of the prayer bead tradition. Again, that's Saturday, March 20 at 2 p.m. and at the University YMCA. The address of the Y is 1001 South Wright Street in Champaign. On Saturdays, the university parking lots are free and available for people to use near the Y. So parking is not a problem on a Saturday. That's the next experiential workshop coming up by the Whirlwind Project, which is exploring the art of meditation and its use in many of the world religious traditions. Another one coming up will be March 27th, another Saturday at 2, and this one will be at the mosque. Mm-hmm. And however, the event at the mosque will not be exploring Islamic tradition, but rather Tai Chi and contemplative prayer. So the mosque is hosting this for the community, but it'll be a couple other religious traditions on March 27th. And then March 28th, Sunday, there'll be a poetry and prose reading about meditation, exploring meditation through poetry and prose at the Verta Gallery and Cafe, 17 East Taylor Street in Champaign. That'll be at 1 o'clock on Sunday, March 28th. So those are some of the events coming up the next few weeks that the Whirlwind Project is sponsoring. Our guests today on Keeping the Faith are Mujahid and Abu Bakr Al-Fayyad from the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center, father and son. Happy to have both of you here.
Thank you.
And let me get back to you, Abu Bakr. How did you go about learning how to chant this way, how to read the Quran in such a lovely way?
Just by practice. I mean, it's just like normal reading. If you want to memorize a script, you just practice, keep on repeating and repeating until you memorize.
But is it a tune? Is the way your voice goes up and down, does it follow a prescribed pattern, or is it impromptu? Are you making it up as you go along? Can it vary?
It can vary between, I mean, there's different styles of doing it, especially in the Quran. You can do it because there's like famous readers that do it, and mostly people copy them to try to do it. And it depends on each person if their voice can help them in doing it or not.
I see.
Yeah.
Yes, Mujahid.
Well, of course, according to the Quran, what was revealed in the Quran is not only the wording of God, but also how to pronounce, how to read the Quran. So for everyone who reads the Quran, he learns how to read and how to recite, and that's what we call tajweed. Tajweed means that making your voice nice. Mm. Okay, the rules are there. The vowels, okay, how to extend the letter, and all of these are in the Quran. So when kids learn that in school, and especially in the religious school, they are taught how to read and how to sing, how to sing these verses. So it's there in the script of the Quran, and that's what makes the difference between the Arabic and some other languages, that you can see all of these vowels and all of these rhythm tones in the Quran. So by following this and also adding some kind of artistic incorporating the both of them, the art and whatever has been there, this is what he's doing.
And when the Quran is read in Arabic, is a translation always given?
Well, it depends. If we are reading that in the prayer, the translation is not given. Mm-hmm. But sometimes in the sermon, for instance, on Friday, the sermon is always in English. Mm-hmm. But we sometimes provide both the Arabic and the English text. For the Arabs, sometimes when they read the Quran in Arabic, it makes them feel different from reading the translation. Because in any language, not only in Arabic, in any language, when you translate, just like translating a joke from one language to another, it loses its meaning.
Or a poem.
So, or whatever. Yeah. Right. So most of the time we provide the Arabic text and also the translation for the...
Now, Islam, of course, is an international religion, and yet Arabic is used around the world when the Quran is read in mosques. But there are Muslims who may not understand a word.
Yeah, of course.
Of
Well, you can say that 20 or less than 20% of the Muslims are Arabs.
Uh-huh.
80% of them are not Arabs. But I could say that this percentage could go up to 50% for those people whom they can read and understand.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the African people, and people in Africa, people in Asia, they understand the language. So when they read the Quran, although they are not Arabs, but they understand it. Once the Arabic language is required in schools and it's required at early age, people tend to learn the Arabic language and tend to understand at least the Quran. Sometimes people, they cannot speak Arabic. They cannot communicate in Arabic. But when it comes to verses of the Quran, they know the meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a mixture of all of these. And the Quran was made in this language, and people were asked to say that in Arabic in order to understand the language in which the Quran was written.
Mm-hmm.
You see, this is a kind of way to keep the Quran intact without any change.
Mm-hmm.
This is at least one of the reasons that we see.
Let me again encourage listeners to give us a call if you have a comment or a question for our guest today on Keeping the Faith in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL, the call letters for our station, of course. Elsewhere, you may call us wherever you're listening, including perhaps on the Internet, since WILL is broadcast live over the web. If you're listening at WILL.UIUC.edu, you may also call us toll-free 1-800-222-9455. That's a free call, 1-800-222-WILL. Let me mention again that our guest today will be participating in different whirlwind projects over the next several weeks. The imam from the mosque, our guest today, Mujahid Al-Fayyad, will be at the University Y this coming Saturday at 2 in the afternoon. That's March 20th, 1001 South Wright Street. And we'll be, again, talking and demonstrating a meditative chant in the Islamic tradition, and also the prayer bead tradition of the Roman Catholic Church will be being demonstrated, and people have a chance to experience that, led by Vera Duncanson. And I see we have a caller waiting on line one. Let's go to that call. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm calling from Champaign. I would like to know, please, if women ever can recite the Quran in the mosque, or does the practice vary from mosque to mosque?
Okay. Well, that's a good question. Thank you very much for that question. In Islam, women and men are always invited to come to the mosque for prayer, for learning. And we have, of course, in our mosque, we have a Sunday school, and both genders are welcome to come. To bring their kids, of course. This is for, but we do have also sessions for adults, so they can come and learn how to read the Quran, how to recite inside the mosque, inside the prayer hall. They can come and grab a copy of the Quran, and they can read and recite for the sake of recitation, for the sake of learning. Both genders are invited to recite. But when it comes to prayer, we usually have only the imam who leads the prayer, read or recite loudly. But in the other kinds of prayer, when they stand with the alone or in a group, they can recite the Quran, and it is part of our life to be with the Quran. And that's why you find people who memorize the whole Quran, because we are asked to recite and read the Quran every day. It is not something limited to Friday, or it's not limited to certain prayers. So both genders are asked to share equally in the process of reciting the Quran.
We're about halfway through our program, and I want to thank our callers. Let me take just a moment to remind people what's coming up here on Keeping the Faith in the weeks ahead. Next week, Reverend Miley Palmer will be our guest, talking about the popular book, The Da Vinci Code, and particularly what it says about women in the Christian church history. And Molly Palmer will be talking with us about that. Molly's a former pastor of the Wesley Foundation here on this campus, currently living in Decatur. He'll be our guest next week, the 21st of March, here on Keeping the Faith. On March 28, Father George Rem will be our guest. Father Rem is the priest at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Urbana that's just been celebrating its 100th anniversary. And that centennial celebration has been a marvelous thing for our community. And Father Rem will be our guest on March 28 here on Keeping the Faith. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program. I'm the director of the University YMCA here at the University of Illinois. The Y is the oldest religious institution at the university. It was started by students back in 1873. So for the last 131 years, the Y has been serving the campus and community, particularly helping students develop their leadership abilities by volunteering, helping with tutoring, working on issues to protect the environment, social action issues. And if you'd like to learn more about the Y programs, please check out our website at universityymca.org. We have a caller waiting. Let's go to line one. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guests from the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon. I was just wondering if the guest could explain the difference between the three Abrahamic religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, and how they differ and how they're similar and why Islam is different. If you could answer that question, I'd really appreciate it, and I will hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Well, we always say that the source of all of these religions is one, and that's God. God is the source of all of these divine religions, and the religion of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam was the religion of Abraham. Well, Abraham, we consider him as the father of prophets. So God sent Abraham for a message, and this message was lost throughout history until he sent others after Abraham among his offsprings, until and they were following their father's religion, which is the religion of God, a message from God, until Moses, peace be upon him, came, and he came with a message. And the story about Moses in Islam and other religions is almost the same. He took this message, he carried it out, this message, throughout that time, and for his people, for the children of Israel, as we call them in the Quran. And he continued with this message until God chose Jesus Christ, peace be upon him, to continue with the message. Well, of course, you can say that is that the same message? It is in the spirit of the message is the same. It is from the same source. It is teaching about the same principles, and you can see in all of these religions that the principles are the same. Now, after a while. And this has been the same for all religions, by the way. It's not only about Christianity, but about all religions. When people tend to change or forget about the message, God will send another prophet to revive the religion and also to tell people, to warn people and also to advise people. So God sent Muhammad as a messenger in Arabia at that time, and he sent him with the message of al-Islam. Al-Islam is not a message for Muslims. It's not a message only by Muhammad. It's not. Well, in Islam, we consider that all messages before us, the divine three messages, are called al-Islam, because Islam means submission to God. So all of them are teaching almost the same thing. So to me, if you want to me to see what are the differences, there are no major differences as or according to God in these three religions, because what God wanted from humanity to be is the same throughout history, from Adam till Muhammad till the Day of Judgment. It is the same message, the same spirit, the same principles, but when people get a little bit deviated or change or whatever, God is trying to send messengers from time to time to get people on the right path. So if you tell me that there is something here which is made forbidden, or this is something made lawful to others, this sometimes it is related to the development of religion willed by God, if you can say that. God wanted this generation to follow his guidance according to certain procedure, and then after that he sent another prophet and he asked people slightly different because of the development of humanity. So what he asked Moses to do could be different from what, slightly different I should say, from what he asked Jesus and his followers to do and from what he asked Muhammad. But the spirit, the soul, I would say, the soul of religion is the same. And that's why we are trying even to tell Muslims, especially in the West and also in this area, that we are friends, and also we can say that we are brothers to those people who believe in God. They unify God, they believe in God, and they believe in all prophets. And it's part of our faith and belief that we believe in all prophets and all books of God. So we are trying to make this kind of feeling in the hearts of all people in this area, that we are all working for one target, to call upon people to God. It could be a different way that we practice. It could be slightly different from what the Christians or Jews are practicing. But our God is one, although some other people refuse that. They say, well, our God is different. But we strongly believe that our God is the same God who created Adam, who sent Adam, and he sent also all prophets of God, and the one who created Moses and Jesus and Muhammad, peace be upon them all.
Now, Mujahid, when you mention the name of the prophets, not only Muhammad, but also when you mention Jesus and Moses, you include the phrase, peace be upon him, or peace be upon them all. That's a form of respect, of honor that's given to people.
Well, it is also part of our understanding and faith. It is not only to honor them, to say that, well, we are pleased about them, but also when we mention a prophet, any prophet, we strongly believe that all prophets were chosen by God as the best among human beings. So when he chose Abraham, and when he chose for instance, Moses or Jesus or Muhammad, peace be upon them all. Okay, it is, just to be frank with you, Steve, that we respect all prophets and we don't accuse any one of them of doing anything bad. Okay, so all of them were pure of sins. They were good. They were chosen among the best of human beings. So that's why when we say peace be upon him, we are trying to show others that he is the best among people, and also we respect him the best because we believe in him. Not only praising him, but we believe in him. We believe in his message.
Can there be another prophet after Muhammad?
No.
So Muslims believe that Muhammad was the final prophet.
Yes. Muhammad, when he came, he said that I came, and he said that there will be no prophet after me. Mm-hmm. And we can see who came after Muhammad for the last 14 centuries. There were some prophets who claimed that they were prophets, but as prophet coming from God, bringing a message from God, which is similar or like the other messages, no one came after that. It is not to say that, well, he is the only one. No, we are saying that he is considering himself by God as the seal of the prophet because, you know, the religion was perfected for human beings.
Now, in many religions, people who are living today often have a great deal of religious power and authority. Mm-hmm. In Catholic Christianity, there are popes and cardinals. In Protestant Christianity, often just a minister in a certain area can become very, very powerful over his or her own people. This happens in Islam in some parts of the world where particularly some ayatollahs seem to have a great deal of control. How does that happen? How are they given that authority?
Well, among the Muslims, unfortunately, there's no authority nowadays taken by a person. Sometimes the ayatollah are those leaders of the Shi'is, for instance. We don't have ayatollah or that kind of position among the Sunnis, who are the, maybe 90% of the Muslims. The authority usually is given to institutions and to school of thoughts. During the history, Abu Hanifa, for instance, he is the head of the school of Hanafi. The Shafi is the school of Shafi'i, of these four schools of thought. So the problem is with the concept of hierarchy in Islam. We don't have that kind of position except for the Prophet. And this is actually to protect the Muslim community from deviation, because once we stick to a person and we start making him holy and so respectful and he cannot commit sins and this and that, this will take the authority from God and giving that authority to a person. Well, sometimes it is done out of respect. Of course, this is for the ayatollah or whatever, because these are knowledgeable people. They are scholars. They know religion better than anybody else. So they are giving some titles. Otherwise, you know, the schools are respected. For instance, the school of Al-Azhar, the school of, you know, here and there in during history, and also the major school of thoughts, they are giving the full respect. Otherwise, people are qualified by through their knowledge. If they are knowledgeable and they can lead the crowd and they lead their nations, they are given the respect. Otherwise, without this, they are not recognized, but just normal people.
Mm-hmm. In World War II times, Christians were have often been condemned, I think often justifiably, for not speaking out when other Christians were persecuting Jews in Germany. Mm-hmm. Leaders of Islam have been criticized in recent years for not speaking out when other Muslims around the world have done acts of violence. Is part of the reason that there hasn't been much press about Muslim leaders speaking out when, for example, recently with the explosions, you know, in Spain that may have been religiously motivated? Is it because there isn't a hierarchy in Islam and there isn't sort of one person in charge?
Well, I should say that it is not with Islam, but the problem is with the Muslims nowadays. Nowadays, Muslims, they don't have any reference because they are not allowed to have that reference, just to be frank to you. Well, for instance, now in Al-Azhar, the sheikh or the leader of Al-Azhar is appointed by the government. Hmm. And when he speaks on behalf of the government. When a person who is you know, the minister of endowment or a person hired by the government, he cannot speak in the name of Muslims, but he should speak in the name of his government. Mm. Because of the situation that we are in right now, we don't have that authority. But that doesn't mean that Islam doesn't permit that or Islam doesn't encourage that. No, Islam does encourage this. And there should be one reference, one leadership for Muslims. But unfortunately, because of the era of occupation in some of the majority of Muslim countries, they were not given the right to speak up, to have their representative. And now it's even worse, I could say. Okay, but this is related to the situation of Muslims, not to Islam itself.
I see.
Yeah.
Want to encourage another couple of calls. We're down to about our last 10 minutes of the show, but do call us in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455 is a free call. We have someone waiting on line one. Let's go to that. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you. I have a comment and also a question. My comment is I really am enthusiastic about the Whirlwind Project. I think all the ecumenical movements we can make toward peace are to be respected and honored. My question is, you've explained brilliantly, and I tuned in late, so I apologize for that, about the Arabic thought and practice and religious meaning. My question is, can you distinguish how is the Arabic way of peace? Talk about that a little bit. Thank you, and I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
The question is about peace in Islam. Salam is the Arabic word for it, very close to shalom in Hebrew. What is the history and ideas about peace in?
Well, as you mentioned, that Islam is a kind of expression in Arabic about the religion of all prophets of God, as I mentioned before, and also Islam is taken from the root of Salama, means being peaceful, mm-hmm. or the one who is saved. So that's why the when you greet somebody in Arabic, you say Assalamu alaikum, means peace be upon you. And also the Salam is one of the names of God. If you mention the 99 names of God, one of them is Assalam, means the peace. Well, the message of Islam, since it started, it was calling upon people through peace and calling upon people without forcing them to become Muslims. And this is really the message of Islam, following peace and not forcing. Okay, God says there should be no compulsion in religion. So, which means that this message of Islam and Salam, or peace, that's why I say that it's a continuation of all messages of God. Because Abraham came with peace, an argument with his enemies. Moses came with peace, an argument with Pharaoh of Egypt. Jesus Christ, peace be upon them all, he came also with the message of peace. And Muhammad did come with the message of peace. So this is the basic thing about Islam. And calling people to God means that you call others to share with them the feeling of peace. Anything other than peace is something I would say exceptional. Well, to defend yourself, sometimes you need to use some power, okay? And this is you go out of peace, okay, when you use power to defend yourself. But the basic and the fundamental thing in Islam and other religions, by the way, it is peace, because God is peace, calling for peace. And he is trying to show people that if they want to obey God, they should obey him in peace.
Let's take another minute to hear something from the Quran recited or chanted by our second guest today, who is the 14-year-old son of the Imam, Abu Bakr. Again, welcome. There may be people who've tuned into the program who didn't hear you read earlier. Could you chant us another couple verses from the Quran, two or three, that might give us another experience of Muslim prayer, of Muslim meditation.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Qulillahumma malikal mulk tu'til mulka man tasha' وتنزع الملك ممن تشاء وتعز من تشاء وتذل من تشاء بيدك الخير إنك على كل شيء قدير تولج الليل في النهار وتولج النهار في الليل وتخرج الحي من الميت وتخرج الميت من الحي وترزق من تشاء بغير حساب ربنا آمنا بما أنزلت واتبعنا الرسول فاكتبنا مع الشاهدين.
Thank you very much.
Welcome.
And Mujahid, could you help us with an English translation?
Yes. Well, this is a kind of you can call it a kind of dialogue or kind of link with God. It's asking God, who is the king of the universe? You are the one, just saying that you are the one who gives things to people and also take things from people. And you make people high in ranking, and you get them down. Everything good is in your hand. That's what it's kind of admitting, that everything good is in your hand. And you change day and night, or you exchange day and night, means that you are rotating the sun and you are rotating the earth. And you are getting one time the night, and one time is the day, and you are raising the dead from death, and you are causing death to those people who are alive. Means that it's a kind of recognizing the will of God and the power of God. And then he recited in the second one. He said, "Oh God, we have believed in all what you revealed," and this is not only the Quran, by the way. For Muslims, it's not only the Quran. We have believed in all what you have revealed, means the books before us, mm-hmm. and also the messenger. And then we have followed the messenger, we have followed the Rasul, or the messenger. Oh God, write us among those who witnessed that.
You mentioned not only the messengers, but you mentioned the books. Islam, as well as Christianity and Judaism, are referred to by Muslims as people of the book, and by that you mean not only the holy book for Muslims, the Quran, but the Christian Bible and the Jewish scriptures, the Hebrew scriptures.
Well,
I see we have another caller waiting. Let's go to that, and then we'll go on. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Hello.
Yes, line one.
I'd like to ask about a purely practical matter regarding the Nation of Islam, please. It's common experience if you're traveling in the Middle East in one of the countries who is predominantly Muslim, that everything comes to a close at a certain time of day. Everyone bows either toward Mecca or a certain other holy city. Now, is this something that you would recommend to be continued as a practical matter? It just seems to me that it isn't very, very conducive to recruiting people, or at least gaining sympathy for the Muslim faith, if that were to be the case. Would you address this question, please?
Thank you for the question.
Well, thank you for the question. And actually, Muslims are facing one direction in order to show unity. And of course, in history, the first mosque, or the first, house of worship was built in Mecca by Adam. And then the foundation of that house was raised by Abraham and his son. And the Muslims who came after that, they were following the same direction, or the same way, because they are part of the Abrahamic faith. So wherever we go, we try to face the same place in order to show unity with the other Muslims. And it is not of any difficulty, and this is very easy. Nowadays, for instance, in Champaign-Urbana, we are facing northeast. It is so easy now to locate the direction. And by the way, it is not only to face exactly, because we cannot really say that we are facing exactly, but our prophet says that the direction, every direction you face in your prayer is accepted if you cannot locate the place. So it's not as something compulsory on people to find it out, otherwise their prayer cannot be accepted. It is a kind of symbol of unity. But when we go out and we cannot locate the direction of that house, we just pray to any direction. And if you be on earth, to any direction, you can reach the direction of Mecca, or the house of God in Mecca. There was a in the beginning of the question about the Nation of Islam, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, the Nation of Islam, I could say one thing, that they are coming closer and closer with time to the right belief of Muslims. They have some kind of belief which is not Islamic, I should say, and they are learning with time. And if you see these this group in America and compare what you saw them in the 70s, you see a lot of difference, and they are getting closer and closer. They started praying. They pray to the same direction. They started fasting and all of these things time after time.
Let me ask another question to our other guest, Abu Bakr, who's in ninth grade, a freshman at Centennial High School, and who was kind enough to come and read from the Quran for us and chant for us. When you're doing this, are you performing? Are you yourself praying? You're leading others in prayer. But what's going on inside you when you're doing this?
It's just a special feeling. I mean, when you read it, you think that yourself, you're like really faithful, and every time you read it, you would feel that God is watching you, and you shouldn't like make mistakes and things. So every time you read it, your heart would become like clear from like, so you don't do any more mistakes.
And since you're trying to do it to a very high standard or level, trying to do it perfectly, does it make you nervous? Do you get nervous before you go into the mosque when you know that it's your turn to read or chant?
Not really. If I'm used to a place, like used to a place, I wouldn't get nervous. But when I go somewhere I've never seen before,
like on the radio,
yeah. So any place that I'm not used to, I'd kind of get nervous sometimes.
Well, it sounded very good, and thank you again for doing it.
No problem.
Let me thank both of our guests for being on Keeping the Faith this week. Abu Bakr is the 14-year-old son of Mujahid Al-Fayyad, who's the imam at the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center. And I might just say again that the Whirlwind Project, an interfaith local concern in Champaign-Urbana, a nonprofit organization, is studying this semester the art of meditation. And next Saturday at 2 p.m., March 20th, will be an opportunity for people to experience Muslim meditative chant in the prayer bead tradition, as well as Catholic prayer using beads. That's at the University YMCA, 1001 South Wright Street, at 2 p.m. next Saturday. It's a free opportunity. And then at the mosque on the 27th of March at 2 p.m., Tai Chi and Contemplative Prayer, led by Flory Dammers. That's at the mosque at 106 South Lincoln Avenue in Urbana. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this Keeping the Faith program. It's a live call-in show every Sunday from 5 to 6. I do appreciate people who called in this today. And we look forward next week to having Miley Palmer be our guest on Keeping the Faith. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
If you ever find yourself on a dark country road in Ireland, bring along some salt, red thread, and a cross. That's what you'll need to protect yourself from the other crowd. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, the fairies of Ireland. They're magical, vengeful, and still alive and well on the Emerald Isle. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 Central Time here on WILL Urbana. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: AgriFab Incorporated, Sullivan, Colonial Pantry, Champaign, and Ray's Heating and Air Conditioning, Urbana. These business partners join the Friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
Tonight in Champaign, Urbana, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 20s and west winds 10 to 15 miles per hour and gusty, then shifting to the northwest around 10 miles per hour after midnight. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a chance of light rain late in the afternoon, the high in the lower 40s with east winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, snow likely with rain likely in the evening, snow accumulation up to 1 inch, the low around 30 degrees with northeast winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. It's 6 p.m. Central Time. This American Life is next.